to a wonderful mom?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's because I thought it would be funny because what you said last night about me, you know, that would be my mum and that, and that's just a little joke. It's something I just thought of, spur of the moment.
They're for your mum, aren't they?
Yeah.
Smooth.
To take 127 on Ship Full of Bombs, Thames Delta Independent Radio, www.sfob.co.uk.
You're not even reading that, are you?
I'm not. I've got it all memorised. I'm a professional.
Oh.
You seem to not realise this.
Oh, yeah.
Ah, so welcome, Will Common, to the show. We're a little bit light this evening, aren't we?
We are a little bit light.
A little bit light.
We're very light,
people.
Really.
Very light. Half of the people
it's
aren't
me,
here.
Isn't it?
Unfortunately...
I'm the panel.
You are the panel. You are. Now, be quiet for a moment while I do the intro.
Turn his mic off, yeah?
Yeah, could you do that? All right, thank you ever so much. Mike's here. Mark can't be with us because he has another engagement today. Joe, unfortunately, has had to pull out at the last minute because of work commitments, which means that we have myself, Dan, and directly in front of me, you may speak.
Oh, Mark, oh, okay, I can speak now.
You can.
I'm Mike.
Hello,
as
Mike.
As you know.
And in Mark's absence, we've had to get in somebody special, a guest producer. You'll never guess who it is.
At great expense.
It's the one.
Special by special, it's called Beddle.
The one and only Mr. George Crockford. Hello there, George.
Nice.
How are you doing?
Hello, guys. Yeah, it's nice, this, isn't it?
It's fantastic. It's like doing the pilot
episode.
It is. Again,
yeah,
isn't
you remember
it?
That? All those many, many moons ago. Wow.
Oh, so yes, no, thank you ever so much for stepping
oh,
in.
Oh, absolutely,
really
pleasure,
appreciate
guys.
It.
I couldn't leave you
that's
in the lurch.
Fantastic.
Not a problem at all.
Oh, no, excellent. So, so because Mark isn't here, I volunteered to do one of the synopses for the movie. And now that Joe's pulled out, I've now had to do the synopsis for that as well.
No, I can double. Task, double team,
double. do you mean multitask?
That's all I mean.
As opposed to double team, which I think is something else. Isn't
it's
it?
American football, isn't it? But it's close.
Something else entirely. Well, we're off to an absolutely cracking start, aren't
you
we?
You haven't even said the theme yet. Have
I haven't. No, I was just about to come to that, if you'll allow me. It's you'll never guess what it is.
Spring.
It's spring, isn't it? It's March.
Spring.
It's spring. Spring has sprung, the grass has riz, etc.
Sap is rising.
Etc. And so the theme for this month's show is flowers. That's flowers.
Sorry, could you repeat that for me?
Yes, that's flowers.
Right.
Don't switch off just yet, because we have actually got some decent movies that we're going to do. Well, we've got one decent movie that we're going to talk about. One decent, one fair to middling, and one that was absolute pony.
And some good music, too.
Oh, fantastic music. As always, care of our music maestro, Mr. Mike Burry.
That'd be me.
That is you. Always chooses the music. You did say the other day that you were potentially going to use music from just one of these movies throughout the whole show.
Yes.
Are you still going with that?
Yes. I think we're teased. Oh, I'm popping the mic.
Uh-huh.
What can I do about that?
Oh,
Shall I move back?
No, yeah. You're right, man.
Move back a bit
pop away. Pop away.
I'm pop, pop. Pop.
Could you move back about 6 feet that way? I'll open the door.
I'm loving the love in the room in this. Brilliant.
I thought we might have a What were we talking about? Music, wasn't it?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Marvellous music.
Mm. You'd think we rehearsed this, wouldn't you? It's not.
I don't think you've rehearsed it at all.
Spur of the moment, off the cuff nonsense. Right.
The music will be from the middle film.
Ah.
I think.
A little clue there for everybody, even though they don't know what the middle film is.
No.
Okay, good. So shall we crack on then with the first film? Yes?
Yes.
Okie dokie. So this was from 1988. This was Joe's choice. And remember, the theme is flowers. And the name of this film is Heathers.
Not technically a flower.
Which, of course, is not a flower. But it still counts.
Close enough.
So... A very, very brief synopsis of the film. Veronica, played by Winona Ryder, is part of the most popular clique in the entire school. And the other members of that clique are three girls who are all called Heather. The Heathers are basically sport rich kids who love to be the centre of attention, and they like nothing more than sneering at the other kids in the school who are either nerdy or fat or unpopular, or nerdy and fat and unpopular. Basically, the Heathers are not nice people. Veronica meets a student called JD, played by Christian Slater. He's a kind of a dark, sardonic rebel, and she's instantly attracted to him. They hook up, and for reasons that my brain was unable to retain because it was too boring, Veronica decides to create an unpleasant concoction for one of the Heathers to drink so that it'll make her puke, basically. JD, however, has different plans. He makes his own cocktail, which is one part drain fluid to one part drain fluid.
Don't try that at home.
Don't try that at home, no. Obviously, you would use one part gin to the drain fluid if you were doing it at home. Heather drinks it for some bizarre reason, I don't know why, and instantly dies. Now, one of the other Heathers then steps up to become the new head of the clique, so the bullying doesn't stop, they kind of carry on as before. And this makes JD, Christian Slater, determined to ramp things up, so he coerces Veronica into doing some really unpleasant things, including orchestrating the murder of two football players. I know. Eventually, Veronica picks up on the fact that JD is actually a bit of a psychopath, and she ends up opposing what he's doing, particularly when he decides to blow up the school and everyone in it, or at least he attempts to. Does he succeed? Who knows?
That's an unusual synopsis, Dan, because that's the entire film.
Yeah, well, it's not the entire film, because that took me about 2 minutes, and the entire film was about 4 hours long, I think.
102 minutes.
Oh, 102 minutes, good Lord, the things I could have done in that time. Did I like it?
Did you like it, Dan?
Full disclosure, first of all, I hated the 1980s.
Club, okay. Man.
All of
me too.
Yeah.
I had to grow up in the frigging things,
yes,
honestly.
Yes, absolutely. I was a teenager. I hated the fashions,
yep.
The music,
yep.
The yuppies, the rampant consumerism,
yep.
The people,
yep.
And miscellaneous.
Yeah, all inclusive.
The only thing that I did like about the 80s was some of the movies. Back to the Future, Gremlins. Stuff like that, the classics. Mm. So I missed Heathers when it came out, and it's never been on my radar until Joe very kindly put it there. I watched it, and I was instantly filled with a kind of deep, permeating ambivalence about the whole thing. I think I feel guilty for not liking it, because apparently it is considered to be a bit of a cult classic. But, I don't know, you can't change who you are, and I just didn't like it. I think it was one of those things where you had to be there at the time and experience it when it came out. Approaching it nearly 30 years later as a grizzled old man probably isn't.
I guess it's in that Pretty in Pink kind of Breakfast Club kind of genre then, yeah?
Absolutely, that is what I would say, yeah.
They're two good films, though, I think.
Probably because I've not watched those either.
Have you not? Pretty in Pink.
No.
It's a lovely film. I did Tear to the Eye.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm not meant to be talking about this show, am I?
No, please.
Help yourself.
Please, we're begging for people to fill the empty air.
So I go downstairs and get some.
In terms of a film, Winona Ryder was the best thing in it. And she gave an entirely satisfactory performance.
High praise indeed.
Christian Slater basically plays a young Jack Nicholson.
That's his thing, isn't it?
Yeah, that's his shtick, but this, it was very much there. Every other character in it is a one-dimensional caricature that falls into one of the following stereotypes. They are either a jock, a socialite snob, or a loser. And maybe a couple of teachers as well, if you like, and some parents. That's basically it. Everybody falls into one of those categories. It was fine. It passes the time. I couldn't get excited about it. For those people who saw it in the 80s, I can understand why they love it so much and why it's a cult classic. For me, I couldn't get excited about it.
Oh, we said it all there, really, didn't you? There's not a lot. I've got the DVD here, which eager listeners might have heard me rattling. But on the back it says Shannon Doherty, and that kind of even that just tells you how bad the film is. Mm-hmm. That she's one of the stars of it. She co-stars as one of the greatest black comedies of all time. And then, bizarrely enough, it says, comma, now better than ever. Now, I don't know what that means. I just do not know what that comment means. How could it be better than ever? What, it's not like director's cut or anything. It's just like, don't know. And it's... I think Dan has been a tad hard.
I thought you could say a tad kind, then. He's being very generous to this film.
No, it's perfectly... watchable, isn't it? I mean, it passes the odd hour and a half. I thought fairly painlessly. It's of its time. We've said it before. I'll say it again. It's of its time. A time where you could make happy abandon jokes about fat kids. And no PC, please tell you. Oh, don't know about that. No, I've got nothing much to say, actually, because it's just instantly forgettable. I actually cannot remember the climax of the film at all. It involves Christian Slater and a homemade bomb, I believe.
Yes.
I can't tell you what happened, because it was just so forgettable, and I didn't care.
Yeah,
basically. And it took me 4 goes to watch it.
Ooh.
For an hour and a half. So it was about 20 minutes a night, maybe. Pushed through on that last night just to get that last bit.
I was very much like that with Everybody Wants Some. That took me about 4 goes.
Yeah.
This only took me 2 attempts. I watched about the first hour and 10 minutes in one sitting.
Oh.
And then lost the will to live. and then came back to it the following day.
I think it did get better as it went on. To be honest.
Really?
If somebody wants to put themselves through the pain of watching it, it does get better when it's more of an adventure at the end.
Yeah.
At the start, it's just... Well, you mentioned Breakfast Club and Pretty in Pink, but they've all got humour. This kind of black... It's a black comedy, but... Well, it's kind of black, but there's very little comedy. In fact, I can't remember one... comedic thing that happened. Not one. Can you?
No.
I certainly didn't laugh.
No, I can't remember.
And anything. It's not like, wow, that didn't really work. That was a funny scene, but it just didn't come off. It was like, no, there's nothing there that's funny.
See, it's a shame that Jo's not here, because I think it's probably a favourite of hers, and I would genuinely like to understand why she loves it so much. A lot of people clearly do. I think I'm obviously getting it wrong here. I would love to have heard what she had to say about it. Hopefully she'll tell us next time.
I love Weird Science because I saw it in the 80s. But that doesn't mean it's a good film, does it? Because it's a pretty atrocious film, let's face it.
That's true.
But it's got a little spot there in my heart for it because of the moment in my life when I saw it. I'm sure it's the same with this. If you saw it in, what was it, 87? 89?
88.
Right. If you saw it in 88, I'm sure that's where it comes from. But you're now a an older gentleman.
Hang on, that's...
watching a 1980s teen flick.
Yeah.
But it didn't seem to have an equivalent, say, like Weird Science. She steps out of the time machine thing with no clothes on.
Indeed.
And when you're a young lad,
Kenny
as
LeBrock.
I was about,
it's all about Kenny LeBrock,
about 26 when I saw it. But still, it's the same difference.
You're not wrong.
There's nothing equivalent here for a young lad or lass to latch onto, I don't think. It's not, there's just nothing interesting in this film at all.
Well, I just read it because I don't know the film at all. I've just looked on IMDb. It's the Bible. It's really highly rated. 7.6. And this review says Daniel Walters wrote one of the best satires ever in Heathers, a dark comedy that ranks right up there with Dr. Strangelove and Network. We're in agreement with that, yeah?
I think he's been satirical there.
That's insane.
I'm not joking.
I'm actually sorry.
Oh, just headbutted the mic here. Sorry about that.
No?
That's good dead air there, Dale.
Listeners, just entertain yourselves for a couple of minutes. I just need to read this. Goodness me. Well, it's clearly something that we're not getting. As two grizzled old gets, maybe this movie just wasn't for us. It needs a young lady like Jo to explain it. Right. Shall we have a little bit of music?
Well, may I introduce it, Dan?
I don't know what it is, so you need to tell me so I can put it on. Okay. You know, obviously the listeners don't hear this bit.
Oh, right. We cut that one
this,
out,
yeah, this is all secret squirrel at the moment. So if you tell me what it is,
right,
in a kind of introduction way, then I will cue it up.
Well, okay. Okay, I'll tell you what it is so you can cue up. It's called One. Okay. And, dear listener, this music, because Heathers didn't even have any good music, did it?
No, it didn't.
For an 80s film, 80s music was pretty fab and terrific. let me just continue my train of thought here. Fab, terrific. Pretty in Pink, we mentioned. Psychedelic Furs. What can be better? Heathers, we had Que Sera Sera. And you think, that was the one piece of music in the film? I thought, I'm not going to play that on the radio. So,
quite right.
Anyway, so our next film, and we put a little tease in here for the viewer, audience, reader, listener. That's the one. Listener. We're going to have three tracks. Maybe from this film that comes next. As you know, we've got a flowers theme going on. And this is the track Amy Mann won.
Okay, Mr. Mix.
One is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. Two can be as bad as one. It's the loneliest number since the number one. No is the saddest experience you'll ever know. Yes, it's the saddest experience you'll ever know. Because one is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. One is the loneliest number that you'll ever know. It's just no good anymore since you went. Because one is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. One is the loneliest number that you'll ever know.
keeps them together.
Amy Mann, one fantastic choice, Mike. Fantastic bit of music. Of course, as we know, that was actually written by Harry Nilsson, wasn't it?
It was, Dan. It was. Are you going to tell the Harry Nilsson phone story now?
Oh, if you like. It's not so much a story.
I've heard it.
I won't bother then. Right, unfortunately.
Oh, you can't do that to the poor listener.
To the poor listeners out there in Radioland. Okay, yeah, apparently Harry Nilsson was on the telephone and he was on hold. And obviously there was just like this like doot, 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 doot thing going on. And as he was sitting listening to it in his ear, he just started coming up with the song. One. One is the loneliest number.
That's probably what Laurie Anderson did with O Superman as well.
Really?
Well, same thing, isn't it?
Is it?
Do, do, do. Oh, Superman. Do, do, do. Okay. Do you want to do the synopsis, Dan, please?
I will do this. I'm terribly sorry, folks. Normally, I don't do the synopsis, but now I've been roped into doing two tonight, so I do apologise. This next movie, he says, turning the page on his thing there. Right, okay, this is a movie from 1999, and following the theme of tonight's show, which is...
Flowers.
See that? I put George on the spot there, and he delivered.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Did you notice the little pause as well?
Yes.
I readied myself. I left them wanting something. I delivered.
You certainly did deliver.
Like face for radio.
Yeah. The movie is Magnolia.
Which is a flower.
Which is
a flower. Yes.
It is indeed.
So it fits the theme better than Heathers.
Very much so. Very much so. I don't think anybody could argue with that.
I think we're safe on that one.
You're in there, yeah.
It's directed by Paul Thomas Anderson, who people may recall also directed other things like Boogie Nights. There Will Be Blood, which is one of my favourite movies.
I struggle with it myself.
Oh, absolutely love it. The Master, which I struggled with a bit.
Haven't seen it.
And Inherent Vice, which I think is... everybody struggled with. and Punch Drunk Love, which is Adam Sandler's only good movie.
Don't think I've seen that either.
It's astonishingly good. Really, really fantastic. But anyway, I digress. Magnolia. It's an ensemble drama featuring a huge range of characters, plots, subplots and links. Now, at the beginning of the movie, and I'm not going to talk through the entire plot of the movie, by the way. I'm just talking specifically about the beginning. At the beginning of this movie, there were three vignettes, each depicting an extraordinary tale of coincidence which just stretches the boundaries of belief. And it's narrated by the amazing Ricky Jay, who I love, and he finishes the introductory segment by saying, "It is in the humble opinion of this narrator that this is not just something that happened. This cannot be one of those things. This, please, cannot be that. This was not just a matter of chance. These strange things happen all the time." And the purpose of those scenes, the three vignettes at the beginning, is to demonstrate the extraordinary interconnectedness of things, which I think is a Douglas Adams Dirk Gently thing, isn't it? But that's the essence of Magnolia. It's a sweeping and yet at the same time painfully intimate portrayal of the lives of a number of people, all of whom are connected in some way, be it by blood, marriage, friendship, history, or just dumb luck. And we follow them throughout the course of just a day and a half of their lives. And it's an epic mosaic. Absolutely fantastic. I wondered how I was going to describe this film, And then I realised that I couldn't. And then I realised that I shouldn't. Because it's a film that doesn't require description. It requires watching and experiencing. It's got some amazing people in it. I'm just going to quickly read out a little bit of the cast list. Tom Cruise, Melinda Dillon, Philip Baker Hall, superb, Philip Seymour Hoffman, William H. Macy, Alfred Molina, Julianne Moore, John C. Reilly, Jason Robards. This was Jason Robards' final film, by the way. And Melora Walters, who plays a character in it called Claudia Gator, who is amazing, amazing. And I've not seen her in anything else.
No, I haven't, no.
And I'm really shocked by that because she was absolutely fantastic. All of these people are all connected in really odd kind of ways. Someone is somebody's father and somebody else is that person's wife, and then you've got a guy who produces TV shows, and it's everything is connected, and it's mind-blowing. It's long. It's 188 minutes,
which is over 3 hours.
Over 3 hours.
Over wow, 3 hours. So. That's just madness.
Go and watch that at the cinema.
But
busting.
When you bear in mind that when I watched Everybody Wants Some, sorry to keep referring to that, it took me 4 attempts to watch it. This is over 3 hours long, and I watched it in one sitting, and it's not the first time I've seen it. I've seen this movie about 10 times, and every time you just get drawn in. It doesn't feel like 3 hours. You feel surprised when you suddenly look at the clock and go, oh, my God, really? It's dark outside now. I don't know what to say about this. It's one of those where you can't give the plot away because the plot is so windy and fragmented, but not in a confusing way. At no point are you sitting there thinking, well, I don't understand what's going on here.
No.
It's absolutely clear, beautifully written. I'm going to come to you, Mike. I'd like to hear
Well, I think, I don't know if you kind of read it off Wikipedia or if you made this up, but you said sweeping yet intimate. Was that your... Is
yes,
that what?
Absolutely.
I think that's fantastic. I'm not being sarcastic. I think that is just knows what it is. Can I say a little bit about this film?
Yeah, please, just go for it, yeah.
Because I first saw it, I missed it totally. I don't think I was particularly on my radar at all when it came out in 99, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. I didn't see it. I only saw it a couple of years back, and only because I... DVD in the pound shop. For a pound.
Goodness, mate.
So I bought it, liked it, but didn't love it. But I did like it. But there were scenes that I thought, well, I don't quite know what's going on with this. And I'd like to just talk to... And I'm not going to give stuff away, because if you've not seen this film... See it. If you're into films, see it. If you're into stuff just slightly out of the mainstream, but really still comfy mainstream, not weird, not too weird anyway, then see it. So just see it, whatever. But when I first saw it, I thought, that's a good film. But there were things that I thought, oh, I don't know about that. For instance, and this is not a spoiler... Out of the many out of the many different dramas going on, two people are dying of cancer. And it's a long, long movie. When I first saw it, I thought, two people dying of cancer? That's kind of one too many, really. And perhaps they should have cut this out, cut that, cut it, streamline it down. A two-hour movie would have been really good. That's what I thought then. And also I thought the music, I'm not sure they've... Because the music is quite in your face, the way they use it. And there's one particular scene, which I'm not... Again, I don't want to give it away because it's going to knock you out how they... The director Anderson has used music as good, if not better, and I would say better than Kubrick uses music. He's just done something stunning. But when I first saw it, I thought, I'm not sure about that scene. And the other thing that I didn't quite get when I first saw it was the climax. And again, I'm not going to give it away at all. But it's something like, if David Lynch had thought it up, he would have thought then to himself, nah, it's a bit weird. So, and it's just the end, the last 20 or so minutes are just, it pulls the rug from my, you think, what the hell am I watching here? It's just so off kilter. And I didn't quite, I thought, well, I got to the end of the movie and I thought, oh, I'm not so sure about that. And the final thing when I first saw it, some sort of a fourth wall breaking. And I thought, oh, I don't know about that. Matt, a good movie. Saw it again for the show. Everything I thought I'm not so sure about, I absolutely love. And I think he's done it better than anybody else has ever done those. The break in the fourth wall, the final scene of the film, which I'm not going to say what it is, just marvellous. And the final image is very Kubrickian, I would say. And it's just, blows you away. It's just so heartfelt, so wonderful. And the way he uses music, and sometimes he puts the music that we played one track that he uses quite well. The music and the lyrics comment on what's happening in the film. So it's like a, if I was being Ponzi, I'd say something like a Greek chorus or whatever the hell they are. The lyrics are actually telling you what the theme is and what's happening. And I didn't get that at all first time. This time, wonderful. I'm talking too much. I'm being a bit incoherent here. Mainly because it's just such a marvellous movie. And a movie that I'm going to go back to again and again, I think. It's now in my top 10. It was like a good, solid, good movie. Now it's way in my top 10, maybe top 5.
Ooh.
It's just marvellous, marvellous, marvellous.
Wow.
And you've got to see it, and you've probably got to see it twice because you just won't believe what you've seen the first time.
And it'll only cost you £1.
Pound in the pound chop. Other pound chops are available, called pound chops as well. But so perhaps they're not.
It's, I can't disagree with anything you've said. It is an extraordinary movie. Interesting that you said about the relationship between the film and the music and the lyrics of the music. Amy Mann wrote, apart from that one song that we just listened to, every other song in the film she actually she wrote. You know, the lyrics and music. And the lyrics are so good that Paul Thomas Anderson actually lifted one of the lyrics from her songs and put it in the film as a line, as one of the characters says.
Yeah.
The character says, now that I've met you, would you object to never seeing each other again? And he just, I think when she presented the song to him, he was like, that's a great line. And he just put it in the film. We got someone to say it.
Yeah.
The musical scene that you didn't want to give too much.
Yeah, if you want to, you do it. But it's so good and so unexpected.
Yeah, I'm not going to explain what it is, what happens. But when you watch that scene, you will know it. The first time I watched that movie, that was the scene that totally won me over. I loved the rest of the movie, but that was the scene.
Really,
that
that's the film I kind of thought, don't know.
All right, no, cemented it for me, that scene, because it was kind of a breaking the fourth wall. Are you okay there,
I've
Mike?
Just headbutted okay, Mike again.
Mike's just fallen, and he can't get up.
You hope.
Are you? it's an extraordinary scene, and there's a dreamlike quality to it. It kind of lifts you out of the film for a moment, but in a fantastic way.
Yeah.
And it totally works.
Yeah.
And you've just got to watch the film just to be able to see that scene. By the way, can we just say Tom Cruise is in this, and this is kind of a bit of a career best thing, in my opinion. What do you think?
Well, you mentioned all the actors, and if I can, may I backtrack just slightly? Because it's just at the end of like award season, and I've been watching like a few of the Oscar movies, nominated movies, and looking at the acting, and you know, it's all been terrific this year. The people that won awards for acting deserved them, I think. All pretty good. But in this film, just about every single character could have been nominated for an Oscar. Oh, the film is just that full of strong performances. Mm. Like, massively strong. Tom Cruise did get nominated for Best Supporting Actor. Mm. And, yeah, he's marvellous.
Yeah.
Again, first time I saw it, maybe I thought, it's a little bit over the top. But second time, I thought I knew exactly his character. Mm. And there's what I think Thomas Anderson has done. There's one thing, because he hadn't really told what his character is, and he's his kind of self-help guru. And he's very foul-mouthed, very foul-mouthed, with lots of foul-mouthery going on. But where's I going with that? Any idea, Dan?
None whatsoever.
No.
I, along with the listeners, were just enjoying listening to the sound of your voice.
No, I've lost the thread. But basically, he was fantastic. Mm. But no more or less fantastic than any of the other characters. John C. Reilly, I think, was just awesome.
Oh, in the film. Yes, absolutely.
And that little, what would you call that? That kind of thread of him being a kind of innocent policeman with trying to get to know a girl who's like from the wrong side of the track, or maybe not from the wrong side, but made a few bad decisions, and she's a cokehead, and it's just so beautiful, their relationship. It's just unbelievable, and it's their relationship the film ends on. Really, I'm not going to tell you how it pans out, but it's just. I think
it's lovely that you picked out John C. Reilly, because he is most well known for me for being like a comic actor, and he's been in some fantastic things like Step Brothers. He was absolutely amazing in that with Will Ferrell. So good. In this, there's a scene as a policeman where he chases a guy in the rain, and he falls and he slips and he's on the ground and the guy gets away. And then John C. Reilly realises that he's dropped his gun and he can't find it. And there's just this scene of him standing there. And he's a good cop. He is a good cop. And he's just standing there in the pouring rain. A very religious man as well. Standing there in the pouring rain, in his uniform, crying like a baby and begging with God, please let me find my gun, please. Because it's like, you know, it's the worst sin possible for a policeman to lose his gun. And it is such a powerful little kind of 2-minute scene of him just standing there crying. And, you know, amazing performance. But there's something about it. If you've not seen the film and you've just listened to me explain that scene of a man crying in the rain because he's lost a gun.
How do you know he's crying, though? Because obviously it's raining, so that would mask the tears.
But if you're listening to that, you might be thinking, I don't think this film's me. Trust me. That is just one of many great scenes, little character observations, little... it's so, so good.
But I've forgotten...
Are you going to talk about any other films?
No. No. Who cares?
No, because there's only one more film to talk about, but, and it's not that good.
William Macy. Bill Macy.
I call him Bill.
Oh, well, you would.
When I see him down the co-op.
But it's... I'd be hard pushed to say which little mini movie, if you like, within this movie that I like best, because his character is so heartbreaking.
Yeah, Quiz Kid Donnie Smith.
And like, what he's saying, you know, I've got so much love to give, I just don't know
where to put it.
Missus. But it's just such. It's heartbreaking. Heartbreaking. Mm. During the course of 3 hours, I was crying more than once.
Mm.
It's just such a fantastic film, isn't it?
Yeah.
Marvellous.
And we must say, at times heartbreakingly sad, at times extremely funny. There were just some really funny moments in it. But most
and
of all,
and at times extremely weird.
Just totally bizarre. There are things that happen in this movie where you will just think, well, hang on, what's going on here? How can that happen? Trust me, these things have happened. Which again takes me right back to Ricky Jay at the beginning of the film when he does his narrator's voiceover. Yes, strange things do happen. Magnolia, fantastic film. Absolutely love it. I think this is definitely... We don't even need to bother talking about the next film, do we? Because this is the winner.
Oh, yeah. This month. I mean, obviously, it's the winner. The next film, yeah. But this film is wonderful. A bit more music, do you think?
I think so. I can see you looking at your list.
List of... Well, the next, funnily enough, and this is... again, from the same movie, from the same singer, artist, a man. It's called Wise Up. This is the scene, me and Dan have both been hedging around, being a marvellous, marvellous scene.
Yes.
Before George hits a button, just, I don't know if you know this, Dan, but in the actual video for the film, video for the song, have you seen it?
I haven't, no.
In it, Amy Mann is, it looks like they spent a fortune because they've got kind of clips out the film with them all... in location in the film, and Amy Mann is like wandering. It looks like she's wandering around the set and like hugging them, and you know, and you think, what? They must have spent a fortune doing this video to make it all look so seamless. Actually, Anderson directed it, and at the end of every day, he got Amy Mann in to walk around. So it's just like video on the show, and he won awards. He's like, I'll come in here, just walk about a bit. He won like best video of the year. It's so clever. No, he got a man to walk around a bit.
But it's basically a load of stuff from the extras on the DVD, and they've put a bit of music to it. And here's your award.
Well, it's a fantastic piece of music.
Amazing.
Wise Up, and listen to the lyrics, people, because it tells you what the film's about, really.
What's on? I'm feeling really
chilled out.
You're
crying again
now,
aren't you?
I am.
Just the thought of it.
I am. So, yes.
Or are you crying again, thinking what the next film,
the next film that we're going to be discussing. Right, so, gentle listeners, you will be delighted to know... Well, I think that's yours, George. Sorry. You'll be delighted to know that I'm not doing the synopsis for this one. Passing it over to
Mike, the king of the synopsis.
Synopsis king of Chicago.
Right. This film, 2001, it's not called 2001, that's the year it was made, just to clarify there.
Because, of course, that's not the theme, is it? The theme of this show is...
Is...
Flowers. Flowers.
Yeah. And this film is called Iris, which is also a flower, making it fit the theme.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, that's all it's got going for it. Anyway, synopsis time. And I've written stuff down. Right. Made in 2001, I've said that, I think. Richard Eyre made it. He's big in theatre, apparently. Me, I'm very small on theatre, so I don't really know. But he's sort of head honcho of the National Theatre at one time. You know, I believe that's quite a good gig to get, you know. But he doesn't really do films. Not that you'd know that from watching this one, would you, Dan? But anyway, it's about Iris Murdoch. Have I said that?
No.
And the fact you know it's about Iris Murdoch, because it says so on the cover and the posters, that is about the only clue you get. It's about Iris Murdoch, because... I actually didn't know... I've gone into a review before synopsis. Sorry about that. shall I tell you what the synopsis is?
John, go on.
Iris Murdoch.
Yes.
And her... It's told in two... I'm good at these synopsis.
You are. You're doing very well.
It's told in two halves. It's a game of two halves. Iris Murdoch is a young, vibrant, sexy, free spirit with a bad haircut. That's, you know, she's got a free spirit with bad hair. At Oxford, when she's a young sort of Don... Do they call it Don's? I don't know. She's Oxford. And she meets... a guy later to be her husband. So half the movie is Kate Winslet and Hugh Bonneville, both very good, all lovey-dovey as youngsters at Oxford. Second half, well, it's not second half because it's like interspersed backwards and forwards. It's Judi Dench and Jim Broadbent playing the same characters, but older, and Judi Dench is... getting Alzheimer's, and she's getting worse and worse as the film progresses. As far as the plot goes, that's about it.
Yeah.
There's nothing really happens, and the film is like kind of a disease of the week movie. It's like Alzheimer's is bad. Yeah, I knew that. It's a horrible thing. I'm not... You know, don't wish to make any sort of thing that people might take as making fun of it. No. It's not. It's horrible. But this film is just... Alzheimer's is horrible. Oh, Kate Winslet looked lovely. It's not, you know... It's just not a very well-executed movie. For me, anyway. And the worst thing about it is that Iris Murdoch, we're told... In one scene, she's getting an award, and whoever's given her this award says she's the author of 26 novels and a noted philosopher. And that's really your only clue of who Iris Murdoch is. It's so poorly constructed, this film. You have got no idea. It could be about anyone. And if it was just about anyone who's been a youngster in love... older, with this debilitating disease, illness, whatever you call it, maybe that would have been a better film if it was just like every woman or every man, rather than a film about Iris Murdoch. Because you learn nothing about Iris Murdoch. It's totally pointless. I just don't... It's not a terrible movie. You can watch it, and the acting is very good. In fact, I don't know if I said... Did I mention Jim Broadbent is in it?
Yes.
He plays the older John Bailey. So they're real people, and John Bailey was actually alive when they made the movie.
Hmm.
And he was like a professor at Oxford, and it's based on his book, and probably his, that's probably not a good idea, to be honest, basing it on someone who's like too close to the horrible situation, because it's focused far too much, in my opinion, on the illness, and not very little about Iris Murdoch herself.
Mm. I think you raise a really interesting point, which is, in order to feel the tragedy of somebody losing themselves and the ability to write and read and think coherently, it's important to set them up to show what they were before.
Yeah.
And I kind of didn't get that. When you've got all of the younger stuff with Kate Winslet as Iris, she's always talking about writing a book, this book that she's working on, the book she's going to write. So it's before she was a famous novelist. And then when you jump to the older stuff with Judi Dench, it's after she's written all of her books and she's already a big famous novelist and the Alzheimer's is starting to kick in. So you never... see the bit where she was a big novelist and where she was really successful. And so I don't know, if you're going to have the fall, you've got to have the climb up. You've got to show them, I think, at their height. And that doesn't really come across for me. By the end of it, I didn't know who Iris Murdoch was before I watched this movie. And I still don't.
No, I didn't know who... I'd heard the name and I knew she was an author before I saw the movie. And I purposely didn't read up about it or anything before I saw the movie. And I really know next to nothing about her now.
Mm.
It's just... The acting is very good.
Oh, yes.
To me, Kate Winslet takes her kit off too much. It's distracting me. There's a lot of skinny dipping. I think the director is very a water motif. There's a lot of skinny dip and a lot of floating around underwater in the nude. And you think, I don't really need Kate Winslet's bits bobbing up and down. It's distracting me from the Alzheimer's. Get back to the Alzheimer's. But, see, I'm making a joke of it. It's not worthy of a joke, and it's a bad joke. But it's just a bit... pointless.
It feels like a wasted opportunity.
Yeah, it does. Yeah,
it really does. I think I totally get what you're saying, because okay, if you're not going to go into the detail of who this person was, then make it an everyman.
Yeah,
like you mentioned, make it just anyone and show the horrible effect that it has on them. But if you're going to make it about somebody famous, you've kind of got to show why they're famous.
Yeah.
You've got to show why they were so well-respected.
Why are they special?
Yes,
why absolutely. Are they special? Don't know.
I found that it didn't really work. I wasn't that bothered about it. No. You're looking at your watch. You bored?
I just wondered.
5 minutes.
Oh. 5 minutes. 5 minutes till the end of the end of this show. Hmm.
So one other thing, if you don't mind.
Yes, please.
Because Jim Broadbent won an Oscar for this film.
Wow.
Yeah, Kate Winslet and Judi Dench are both nominated for Oscars.
Hmm.
And Jim Broadbent won an Oscar. Hmm. And the acting is good, but I reckon he won an Oscar because they probably thought he played the young John Bailey as well. Because Hugh Bonneville did play the young Bailey pretty well as a bumbling innocent.
Mm.
He actually wasn't in the opening credits. They only credited three people. So I think the Oscar voters must have thought, God, he he's versatile, playing an old funny daddy and a young innocent. Oh, give him an Oscar.
And Judi Dench won a BAFTA. And yeah, best actress.
Oh yeah, but she always does.
Yes,
she has to just turn up.
And the nominations this year are Judi Dench, Judi Dench, Judi Dench, and Judi Dench.
But funny enough, though, Judi Dench does play the outside in a strange, unfilmic, quite like a very brave acting decision, I guess, because she doesn't go over the top. It's very blank. And probably quite an accurate portrayal.
Mm.
But funnily enough, not a filmic portrayal.
No.
So it just doesn't work on so many levels.
Mm.
But if you go onto YouTube and look at little clips, all the little clips look fantastic.
Mm.
But stick it together and it doesn't make a film.
No, I would agree with you. I would say that it isn't a patch on Still Alice, the Julianne Moore.
That was brilliant.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Really good.
That
was the kind of quick demise, wasn't it?
Yes.
From being, you know, completely coherent to just falling off completely.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Literally dropping off the cliff.
But that took the time to show who she was.
Yes, totally.
And what was going on, so that then the fall was all the more tragic.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I don't think that Iris really did.
That was also related to her age as well, wasn't it? Because she was in her late 30s, early 40s,
yes,
I think, as well.
Yeah.
Really early onset. Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm. But yeah, not a patch on that. Okay, then. Right, so we're running out of time. What's the best film, do we think,
Mike, can I have a stab at it?
Go on.
Was it the first one?
Ah, Heathers. Mike, that was your favourite, wasn't it?
Yes, I loved it.
You know what? I don't think we should insult the intelligence of the listeners.
It's two pants movies and one masterpiece.
Yes. I can't add anything more to that. Right, okay then, folks. We're in the last minute. If you fancy it, stay tuned, because we have Take 127's sister show coming up. Take 127... Overlooked, where myself and Mike and new boy Kirk look at a couple of hidden gems that we think you will really, really enjoy. So have a little listen to that. That's going to be starting in a moment or two. Thank you for listening. It's been wonderful. George, thank you for producing.
Pleasure.
You've been wonderful.
Pleasure.
Thank you, George.
Flowers.
Mike, thank you.
Thank you, Dave.
Flowers. Are we going out on another piece of music?
Oh, I don't know if we've got time.
Well, we can fade it out, can't we, or something?
Well, the third piece of music from Magnolia is called... no, it's not. It's called Save Me. And it's actually the end of the movie music.
Oh, perfect.
And it's wonderful.
End of the movie.
End of the show.
Goodbye.
We don't just chuck it together.
We don't. It's all thought out. It's all scripted. Cheerio, folks.
Can you?